Greetings, this is Frankie Kazarian, one half of Addiction, the original Bad Influence, one half of the best tag team in the business. Yes, that's three syllables. Do yourself a favor, check out the Gurick Report podcast with Steve Gurick and Frank D. And when you do that, you'll have permission to worship me now.
It is Thursday, September the 25th, 2014. I am Steve Gerwick, the webmaster of www.gerweck.net. I'm here with Frank D. And today on the Gerwick Report, we welcome a very special guest. He just was in TNA, and you may see him now in Ring of Honor as The Addiction, along with his tag team partner, Christopher Daniels. He is a former X Division champion, a former TNA World Tag Team champion, and today he's our very special guest. How you doing today, Frankie Kazarian?
I'm outstanding. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good.
Well, Frankie, since departing TNA, I know you're now have shown up in Ring of Honor. I don't believe you're under contract. You're kind of a free agent out there. What you been up to, and how's everything going since leaving Impact Wrestling?
Everything's going great. I'm with Ring of Honor. They are my top priority. You know, they are will be the closest thing to a home promotion for me. They've been treating me. And Christopher Daniels, really, really good. Had some incredible opponents, some really, really fun matches, some competitive matches, and it's a great locker room, man. So it's been great, you know, since June, since we started back there, and sprinkled in a few indies and some international stuff, and schedule's pretty full. Can't complain, man. Life is good.
You're working with Ring of Honor, and I think you guys are doing a great job. And certainly a lot of great tag teams for you to work with in Ring of Honor. But before we get to a lot with Ring of Honor, can you kind of tell us, you know, what happened with TNA and why aren't you and Christopher Daniels a part of the roster anymore?
I wish I could. I guess a question you'd have to ask the powers that be at TNA. Long story short, I kind of saw the writing on the wall late last year, early this year. And, you know, when you just see the direction you're going is basically a dead end street, and you ask questions and, you know, people don't give you answers for whatever reason. Either they A, don't know, or B, just don't want to tell you, you know, the truth, which I think is the case. You kind of see what's going on. So when I left TNA, it wasn't a big shock to me. I kind of made up my mind early, like this January, that when my contract was up, that, you know, it was probably time for me to head out. And that's no fault of TNA's. I'd been there a long time, and just, you know, sometimes you just have to cut ties and just, you know, do your own thing. But I couldn't get an answer. I felt our in-ring work was still at a top level. I felt our promos, our backstage vignettes, everything we did was entertaining. We always went above and beyond what was asked of us. We were still, I think, the hottest tag team act in the company. And they felt differently. So I suppose you asked, I still have, to this day, have no idea, you know, other than being told they're going in a different direction, which is fine. You know, I mean, it's the wrestling business. You're never going to get a straight answer. That's cool. But I don't know, man. It just deteriorated. And, we're no longer there. But, you know, everything happens for a reason. I'm a big believer in fate. I'm very, very happy with where I am as a pro wrestler right now.
Frankie, were you surprised? I mean, you guys were there at TNA. You guys, really, to me, you and Christopher Daniels took a tag division that had pretty much been stagnant, and you guys really kind of upped the ante there and kind of, you know, reinvented yourselves into the Bad Influence. I thought you guys were probably the hottest tag team act that I've seen in a long time outside of Beer Money down there at TNA.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was our idea, man. When we pitched the tag team, because Beer Money had broken up, Machine Guns were kind of on hiatus because Chris Sabin was hurt. There was literally no tag teams, and we knew we would make it a tag team because we're best friends, and you know, we breathed new life into the tag team division, and you know, got it rolling, and I think carried that division for a long time, and you know, we could still be doing that today, but for some reason they thought otherwise.
Yeah, I don't understand it. You know, you guys. I mean, I guess my I have two questions for you as far as it goes. Why do you think that the TNA at one point? I thought TNA. One of the things that TNA was doing the right way was they had all these different tag teams, like you just mentioned. You had the Machine Guns there. You had, you know, just everybody, Bare Money. You had Team 3D. You had all these different tag teams, and all of a sudden they just broke. You know, there were no tag teams anymore in TNA.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you think they were following what was going on at WWE and decided to get rid of all the tag teams? Because I don't understand exactly why that was. And it's kind of when you take a division that was so hot, and then you just completely kill it, and then you try to revive it. It's kind of hard to do that when you only have maybe one other team to work with. So I think my question is, why do you think that happened? And the other one would be, were you surprised that AJ Styles, who had been pretty much the franchise at TNA since day one, did not get his contract renewed?
Well, first, regarding the tag teams, I think, yeah, maybe, I don't know if they were just following the trend of wrestling at the time, but, you know, tag team wrestling nowadays, unfortunately, seems to go in waves where, you know, for maybe 6 months to a year, there's a decent division, you know, four or five good teams, and the belts are being switched a few times, and it's very entertaining. And then they'll go through a phase where there's no emphasis on tag team wrestling, or they'll just throw two singles guys together. I'm a bit of a purist and an old school guy where I really enjoy the era of the Hart Foundation, British Bulldog, Killer Bees, Demolition, Legion of Doom, the established acts. You know, have longevity as teams and offer the viewers something different, man, because a tag team wrestling match is way different than a singles match. And I think that it really spices up a wrestling show if you have established tag teams. So why either company would stray from that is beyond me. But you know what? I just fall down in the ring. I don't write what happens to the ring. But it's unfortunate. And that's just my opinion about tag teams. I don't know why TNA went away from them, but like I said, it could have just been following a trend. We certainly wanted to be the guys to bring it back to the forefront. And, you know, we loved the days of the Rock and Rolls, Roots of Midnight, and, you know, that type of stuff. And we constantly were in their ear telling them we can do this, and suggesting teams to bring in and guys to work. But often it falls on deaf ears, so it's unfortunate. But going to AJ Styles, I was astonished that he left. I wasn't astonished that he left because AJ's a friend of mine, and I was, you know, privy to everything that was going on. I was astonished that TNA didn't do whatever it took to keep them. That really, you know, I would tell them, I said, man, they're gonna at the end of the day, they're gonna give you what you want, because it's you're a franchise guy. You know, if there is a face of the company, it's him.
Yep.
It was him. So I was just astonished that they wouldn't budge. And I guess, you know, I can understand if they had, you know, if they were in financial peril, that's certainly a reason to not, you know, give the guy what he's definitely worth. So I wasn't shocked because I kind of saw it coming, but I was more astounded that they really didn't get their ducks in a row and do whatever it took to keep him. And you know what? The same thing, I'm astonished that Chris Sabin left too. I understand why he left. I know that was kind of on his own volition, but that's another guy, you know, is just one of those guys that's kind of the heartbeat of the company. But you know what? They had to clear things up financially and make room for new guys. And if that's the direction they want to go, that's their decision. But, you know, they definitely lost one of the best wrestlers in the world, who's kind of, you know, out there proving that right now with AJ Styles.
Well, I think they lost a lot of you guys personally. I mean, you just said it right there with you and Daniels departing and Chris Sabin departing. And then I just look at the years, man, of just different people that was on the roster, you know, Sabin, Shelley, you know, and then a lot of other guys, a lot of other guys over there. I mean, I even miss Shark Boy, you know what I'm saying? And it's kind of like, I look at the roster now of TNA, and it's just, I mean, outside of Bobby Roode, you know, and Eric Young, and Abyss, those are really your TNA originals that go all the way back to the
past. And I understand needing to, you know, you can't just have a wrestling company and have the same guys. I understand needing to create new stars and bring in new stars, and I'm all for that. But I also think that, you know, there's a core group of guys that have been very selfless and very, very committed and dedicated to the TNA product. that they should continue to build a brand around while adding in new guys. You know, just because Derek Jeter got, you know, a little bit older, his work ethic never stopped. He never stopped being good. The Yankees never said, oh, let's just sign this shortstop for half the money, because that would be stupid business. You know, there's a reason why established veterans, you know, stick around, and that's why those franchises are successful. I think the same thing could be said for P&A, but again, that's, you know, they have a different business model in mind. But, you know, a lot of people have echoed your thoughts. I agree. All I can say is I agree, but, you know, they don't.
What are some of your goals now that you're in Ring of Honor? Because obviously they do have a number of really good tag teams. Youth Addiction is you and Daniels join the main roster there. You got the Hooligans, you got the Young Bucks, you got the Briscoes, you got Red Dragon, etc. So what are kind of your goals, and who are some of the people you're looking forward to working with at Ring of Honor?
Well, I've already got a chance to work with some guys that I really wanted to work with, which has been great. Ring of Honor, in my opinion, is the best tag team division, the best roster in wrestling right now. You know, working with Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly, Red Dragon, a couple times. Those guys are tremendously talented, both of them. Really, really solid tag team, and just both really good singles wrestlers. Obviously, the Young Bucks, we've wrestled them a lot lately, and are going to wrestle them a lot coming up, and I can't sing those guys' praises high enough as wrestlers and as friends. As human beings, they're both really good dudes, you know, really good friends. Briscoes, we haven't had a chance to, like, really get into anything with, but that's one thing I'm looking at my chops waiting, because I just think from character standpoints, the things you could do promo-wise and vignettes and stuff would be awesome. You know, getting to work with guys like Adam Cole, who's going to be huge in this business someday. He's another guy that's just light years ahead of where he should be at his age. He's awesome. And just getting to be in there with guys like, you know, like old friends like Jay Lethal again. It's been fun, man. It's been really fun. And I'm really looking forward to working with everyone on the roster. Recently worked with Jimmy Jacobs and Roderick Strong, wrestled them, and, you know, guys I haven't been in the ring with in years. And it's just fun. It's just like a renewed energy for me personally.
Now, Ring of Honor currently has a working relationship with New Japan Pro Wrestling. Is there a chance you might cross over and we could see you maybe wrestle in Japan?
There's a chance, and I hope that happens. I hope that happens soon. New Japan is firing on all cylinders. It's arguably the best wrestling promotion in the world right now. You know, a lot of, you know, the thing, there's a lot of guys you can over there right now. And, you know, I understand that, you know, it's, you know, you don't want to flood the market with American wrestlers, but when that opportunity presents itself, we'll definitely jump on that. That'll just be another feather in the cap and another crop of guys that I think we can have really good matches with and do some really entertaining stuff with.
Now, when it relates to your early days at TNA, I remember you teamed up with Matt Bentley. You guys were a team, and you guys were managed at the time with by Tracy Brooks. And then after that, you kind of left the company the first time, I believe, somewhere around that. You went over to WWE. How was that? How was that transition for you, going over to from TNA in Nashville to, you know, arguably the biggest company, sports entertainment company in the world, WWE?
Oh yeah, there's no argument about it, man. It was you can't really explain it. I mean, TNA was a TNA was a wrestling company that I worked for when I was at WWE. It was a giant corporate business, a very well-run giant corporate business. There's a reason they're the biggest and the best. I personally, at the time, I don't think was mature enough as a wrestler and as a man to understand and or appreciate what was going on. I think I was in over my head. I really, really saw the business. I really saw wrestling as a business then, and saw just how big it was, and I think it honestly it took me back a little bit, and I was like, wow, I don't know if I like this or I'm ready for this. But it's, you know, it's so professionally run, and so, you know, it's such a well-oiled machine because it's been around so long, and they do everything right. But it was just, like I said, at the time when I went there, almost, you know, this was 9 years ago, it was a little bit too much for me. I think I might have been in over my head, just in terms of, wow, I'm just used to being in a wrestling company. Now I'm in this giant business, this giant corporation, if that makes any sense. But you know, just, I learned a lot being there in the short time I was, just, you know, from a wrestler's perspective and just from seeing the production element of it.
No, I get what you mean. You're basically, you know, in Nashville, it's kind of like, you know, you were just, you're there to wrestle. And then you go over to WWE, and it's more of a, it truly is sports entertainment. You know, it's a lot more.
Yes, and keep in mind at the time, this was 2005. TNA wasn't even doing, like, house shows or anything yet.
Right.
You know, so, like, and this was literally, we were doing, you know, we just finished doing the Nashville pay-per-views, and we just done, we were doing Orlando.
Right.
We were doing Orlando every other week. You know, and I was still doing, like, Independence a lot. And then all of a sudden, you're this giant, touring rock show. It was just, you know, it was, it's like, TNA started doing a lot more live events, obviously, in the later years, and, you know, became a touring company, and my schedule got really pretty filled up with TNA. But, you know, it was just, there. This was 9 years ago. TNA was half the size it is now. So it was just, it was a huge, huge difference in terms of everything. The locker room, the production, just everything. It's just, you know, it was just monstrous.
When you were starting out in the business, I believe I seen on YouTube not too long ago, you actually were in a training class with, I believe it was Rick Bassman's UPW.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you were actually in the training classes. This is unbelievable to me, but it was you, it was Christopher Daniels, it was Samoa Joe, and John Cena, all in the same class. So I guess my question is that when you were in the class, because, I mean, they showed a training seminar you guys did with Tom Howard. And Cena couldn't do a lot of the moves. I mean, they had to, like, had him, it was like doing retakes and stuff. So were you surprised at how, you know, big John Cena actually became, looking back at him from your days in the school with him?
I wasn't surprised at all, because when I first met John, I've always said this, that his attitude is his best asset. And the guy had a work ethic that was unmatched. When I came back out to California and I started working with Rick Bassman's group, and I would go to the training classes, and we would go there. We'd do training classes 3 days a week, 4 days a week. And when I went there, every time I went to class, there were two guys that were there in every class, Samoa Joe and John Cena and myself. And, you know, he was always there. Yeah, maybe not the most technically sound guy in the world, you know, but he, what he lacks there, he definitely makes up for in a lot of other areas. Yeah, you know, you're not gonna see John go out there and do a Lou Ferris classic, you know, do a lot of go behinds and takedowns and, you know, and counters, but that's not really his MO, you know. And obviously that was, you know, 2000, I'd say, and he was probably not even a year in the business, probably 6 months in. So, yeah, he, you know, maybe looked a little clumsy at things, but I always knew he would have success, maybe not to the level that he is now, which, you know, just becomes the biggest wrestler in the world. But, you know, just from a charisma standpoint, obviously the look, and just his attitude and his work ethic, I knew he would do big things in wrestling or whatever he wanted to do.
You know, Frankie, a lot was made of the six-sided ring in TNA. They have, you know, recently they went back to the six-sided ring. From your perspective, do you think it makes a difference from a fan's view if they watch you wrestle in a six-sided ring or a four-sided ring? And then the second question would be, what is your perception of those two different rings? I've always heard it's much easier, obviously, to bump and use the ropes on a four-sided ring. Did you have a likeness or a preference?
I understand why TNA went to the six-sided ring and just recently went back to the six-sided ring, because they want they want their appearance to be different. That's the whole point of it. When people see it and they go, wow, what is this? This is different. Now, having said that, I've talked about this in the past. Of all TNA's issues, the ring was not one of them. It would always baffle me when fans would, like, come up to me and say, well, we missed the six-sided ring. And I would go, why? And they'd just go, because it was cool. What's wrong with the four-sided ring? I myself am the purist. I prefer a four-sided ring to a wrestling ring. That's what it should look like. But, like, so many people were, like, in such an uproar when it went away. And I was just like, the guys and the gals are not going to work any less hard because there's two less sides of the ring. Like, it's just, it baffled me that that was such an issue. And that it baffled me that they were so, like, that they were raising this big fuss about bringing it back. It's like, it's not, other than the actual seeing it with your eyes and it appearing different, it changes nothing. It's a little harder to stand on the top rope in the six-sided ring because the angles are different. And the ring itself was a little harder, but at the end of the day, I didn't care. If I had my brothers, I prefer a four-sided ring, but it never, it really just astonished me why this was such an issue. Especially with a lot of fans, you know, they would always say like, oh, the company was so much better when they had a six-sided ring. Well, that has a lot to do with how the company was booked and not how many sides are in the ring. You know, that's, you can't really say that. I just never understood that, man. And maybe I'm in the minority, but like, I just, to me, it's wrestling. You should be in a four-sided ring. They wanted a six-sided ring. That's cool. But I never understood why that was such a huge, like, hot topic. It really, maybe I'm missing something, but it's not like there's a whole lot of things you could do different in a six-sided ring other than hitting ropes that are a little bit closer and doing stuff on a few different angles. But, I mean, TNA's roster has some really good guys. They're still going to bust their ass in a four-sided, six-sided, 11-sided ring, which I'd like to see an 11-sided ring. and we'll see. I'd like to see that. But that always baffled me, and I would always ask when fans would say that to me at meet and greets and whatnot, and I would always ask them, why do you miss the six-sided ring? Oh, it was just cool. Okay, why is a four-sided ring not cool? The physical appearance of the ring makes that, if they really think that's going to move the needle and get people to watch, okay, I disagree.
No, I agree with you. I much prefer, I'm a traditionalist like you, tag team wrestling, yeah. A four-sided ring. It's worked for how long and why change it now? And
absolutely.
I think what you said, all the issues that face TNA, how many sides of a ring they have is so low on the list. And
agreed.
I just think, when I think of their product over the years, at one time they had the Knockouts division was very successful and was one of the highest rated segments. I remember the X division being a focal point of the show, and especially those Fox Sports Net shows. That was what really put them on the map, was those X division matches. And then, as you and Frank were just talking about, the tag teams were a big part of the TNA product. So there was definitely at times, there's been different flavors of TNA, and it's been a little bit different from WWE, but I think the trap they've gone into is they've always goes back to the sports entertainment. They try to be WWE light, and I think that's one of the problems probably the biggest problem that faces TNA is, to me, that always seems like they try to be WWE when you had something different, you had something original, and they kept going back to the same old formula.
I agree, and I think that wrestling as a whole is a much too clean, neat, sterilized product. I think wrestling needs to be dirty, gritty, edgy. I'm not talking Attitude Era stuff. I'm talking something different, something very 2014, especially being on Spike Television, people, why can't there be blood? Why can't there be some naughty language? Why can't there be some real gritty storylines and some, dare I say, offensive storylines? Look at the most popular movies in television, and look at their content. It's not good guy versus bad guy because of this, and bad guy goes out there and says mean promo, and good guy says this. It's just, why can we not do some edgier stuff and, some grittier stuff? I think that's what the business needs. It's too neat. It's too clean. It's too sterile. Wrestling and wrestling fans, want something edgier. That's why, ECW carved that niche out all those years ago, because it was the alternative music of wrestling when wrestling was all hair metal. So why can't we have that now? Why can't, and TNA is in a perfect position to be that alternative. But, like you say, they sometimes fall to the trend of just being sports entertainment, using air quotes. So my belief and my thought is that Ring of Honor could definitely be that option and definitely do, just different things in terms of storylines. And at the end of the day, emphasis on good wrestling, because that's what's going to sell a wrestling show. People tune in to watch good wrestling. But, that's all just my opinion, but I just think the product as a whole is just way too sanitary.
I tend to agree with you 100% on that one, Frankie, because I look at the TNA product back in the day when it was NWA TNA on pay-per-view, doing those Wednesday night pay-per-views for $9.99, And the thing about it was that it was a lot edgier, you know, grungier product back in the day when they were on there. And then I noticed the change happening when, okay, they started out with the four-sided ring. And then when they went to Fox Sports Net, they, you know, they had the six sides. And then they, you know, it was like at a time there, you guys were using the still using the four sides on the Wednesday night shows, and they phased them out. And I think with the ring, I agree with you. It doesn't matter how many sides the ring has. I'm a guy like Steve, like you. I grew up on four sides and all that tag team and all that. So I totally understand. I think that at the time with TNA had that ring, it was just basically, okay, we are, this is our identity now. Six sides, what people know TNA for. And I think that's what the fans, when they say, okay, well, we want the six-sided ring back, I think that's what it was. They missed the old days of TNA. And I think that even though they have it here now, it's still not the same, because you don't have Kazarian there and Daniels and Saban and Shelley and all these guys bumping around that ring. You know, and I totally agree with you that the product needs to be a little bit more edgier. I mean, this whole PG content that's going on right now on both shows, WWE and TNA, and the fact that, you know, a lot of the popular shows out right now, Sons of Anarchy, etc., are a lot more violent. This is, like we were talking about violent. I don't understand where we went to this political correctness, and it's definitely in pro wrestling.
And I understand that, you know, you have to, at the end of the day, we all serve our masters, and, you know, that we all, you know, wrestling companies have sponsors and, you know, high sponsorship dollars and, you know, and parental groups and everything. So, you know, you can't have a guy go out there and swear. And I understand that. But, you know, I think that it's important to have a good working relationship with your network and have a good give and take and be willing to push the envelope. And perhaps, hey, maybe you're going to attract new sponsors. Okay, maybe Mattel is not going to sponsor your product, but maybe Budweiser is. And, you know, you can argue that those are two heavy hitters in the market. And I'm not saying you don't have things that Mattel would be interested in. You can have, like you said, the Sharkboy character, who I think was really good, you know, but you can have the, you know, you can have an unfiltered Bully Ray character who goes out there and drops some language that I know Bully can drop, you know, and that will attract a different demographic, you know, and perhaps different sponsors. I could be completely wrong. Like I said, I don't run that aspect of it, but I just think there's room for everyone in terms of viewers and in terms of sponsors.
I tend to agree. You know, I agree with you on that, because I look at it like this. A lot of the content that was put out, and everybody always goes back to the Attitude Era, and they'll talk about, you know, WWE, you know, and my opinion is I've always believed in a trickle-down effect. When the WWE does good, everybody else does good, because then there's a huge following and a huge, you know, popularity in wrestling. And a lot of the problems right now with WWE is that they no longer push that envelope. They don't do it at all because of Mattel and Kmart and all that stuff. But it's like, you know, you look back at the Attitude Era, a lot of those shows, when they started off doing the edgier content, those were PG shows. So
yeah,
can you do PG? You can have, like you say, an example of Bully Ray come out on Impact. In fact, that Impact is TV-14, and it doesn't come off as an edgier product. And as far as the tone goes, it's mind-boggling to me as far as what are they doing down there in Nashville when this segment of the audience, which is a huge part of the male vocal audience, is saying, we miss the Attitude Era, we miss this part of wrestling. You know, TNA could definitely be doing something like that. And like you say, you know, Ring of Honor, you could also do that. And I hope to see Ring of Honor grow, because I know for a fact here in, where I'm at in California, Rosemont, California, we don't have access to the Ring of Honor TV.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And you know, there's that. That opportunity is there. You know, we're dealing with an audience now that was raised on Breaking Bad and Sons of Anarchy, and you know, and just different shows like that. So there's just a whole new different type of product we can present to them. You know, and everyone's so afraid of
like you said, political correctness and what their kids are watching. My thought is, if your kids are watching something you don't approve of, don't let them watch it.
Yep.
If that falls on the parent. Let's not put all the blame on the company. We're always so quick to say, oh, that's inappropriate. Well, maybe your parenting is inappropriate. Maybe you need to, be a better judge of what, little Johnny or little Jane is watching if you think it's inappropriate. But going back to your point, it's just the opportunity is there. And I think there's an audience of wrestling fans and an audience of non-wrestling fans that are just waiting for that alternative, that real alternative, because we haven't had that since ECW. Since ECW closed down, the legit ECW.
Yep.
There's not been that alternative. There was WWE and WCW, which were the same. A lot of the same wrestlers, but the same thing. Whereas ECW was something completely different. And whether or not that presents itself, that's yet to be seen. But we as wrestling fans can just hope,
I got a two-part question about Vince Russo. Obviously, he's been a creative mind in TNA for so long. Your relationship with Vince Russo, what do you think of him from a creative standpoint? And then number two, what was going on with all the, he's working here, he's not working here, we can't say he's working here, and then Russo kind of taking a jab at Spike TV and Spike TV taking a jab at Russo. Can you kind of give us the inside skinny of what was going on there?
Well, my personal relationship with Vince was oftentimes he thought I was nothing more than a wrestler, just a babyface, good wrestler. I mean, but I didn't think he would always, say things like, oh, we need to get something out of you. We need to know, and I would always be like, oh, well, let me say this. And he would say like, oh, well, the babyface wouldn't say that. And I'd be like, okay. At the time, who was I to challenge that? Okay. But, the only times he ever called me on the phone was to tell me about suicide and tell me about Serotonin, Raven's group. And I remember like one time when we were doing the Fortune gimmick, the Fortune angle, and we were heels, and he one time wanted me to take $100 bill and stuff it into someone's mouth, King Julius's mouth. And I went, and at the time, Ted DiBiase Jr. was doing that on TV. So I saw it written, and I went and I told him, I said, Vince, Ted, this is what Ted DiBiase does. And he goes, yeah, well, that was years ago. And I would say, no. His son is doing it now, like as we speak. And he goes, oh, okay, we'll do something else. And it was just like that. I was like, wow, you can't be that out of touch. I mean, but whatever. Regarding the relationship with TNA, I heard rumblings just like everyone else did in, late last year, early this year. And, just from seeing things happen in the company, I absolutely thought he was working for the company. Just from seeing certain things and certain people come back and, I don't necessarily know if Chris and I are, on his Christmas card list, and we weren't being used very much at all. So I kind of tongue in cheek at first said, yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all. I would be shocked if he wasn't secretly working here. And then all that nonsense came out, and it was just, to me, it was just really silly. Like it was silly on TNA to do this in secret. That was just bad in my opinion. Like, if you're gonna have the confidence in the guy, say please consult with our television show. Have the confidence to just have the balls to say Vince Russo was writing on our show. Who cares what flack you're gonna get? If you trust his judgment, who cares? Now, if you're just doing that to save face because he was gonna give your company an even bigger black eye, I guess I get that. But it was just, the whole thing was just silly. Why would you do anything and not tell your employees and your wrestlers about it? It's just not conducive to a good workplace, or not conducive to a good wrestling product. I don't understand it. And like you said, then so they start taking jabs at each other, and it's just like we're children again. And well, they knew I was working for them. Well, no, they didn't. None of that's my business because I'm not there anymore. But it's just, I don't get it. If I had a guy that I thought could write my wrestling show and be a good consultant, I would say, hey, this guy's working with us. If I caught flack for that, I'd be man enough to take that. I just don't understand the secrecy of it all. I don't get it.
Well, I guess a good question, a good follow-up question would be for that. What is your personal opinion of Vince Russo?
I think Vince is a very creative guy, very bright guy. I don't think he single-handedly killed any company. I don't think anyone could possibly do that. I don't know that he... I don't think his emphasis is on wrestling enough. I know in talking to him and in hearing things he said that, you know, the segments have drawn better numbers and, you know, people tune in to see the drama. And then I get all that. But, you know, at the end of the day, everything has to be paid off by a good wrestling match and good wrestlers. And I don't know that his emphasis has ever been on that. And I could be way off the mark here. But I think that he got too caught up in being Vince Russo, the creative genius, instead of just Vince Russo, you know, the wrestling writer. Perhaps fell victim to doing things that are maybe too outside of the box. And I'm all for outside of the box. I think you need it. Don't get me wrong. But that's, you know, but personally, I think he's a bright guy. You know, I think that, I think maybe now with his website and everything, he's found his niche, and maybe he should just do that and concentrate on that and, you know, and just kind of stay away from the business, which he probably is now, but he's just got that hot button, you know. People have such an opinion about him, and, you know, I don't know if he deserves all the hate that he gets. I don't think anybody deserves that from certain people and certain wrestling personalities, but, you know, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't really, it's hard to really put into one word what my personal opinion is of him, just because, you know, there's some things I've agreed with him that he said, and there's some things I think sound just completely ridiculous coming out of his mouth. You know, it's just kind of wacky.
Yeah, we had Russo on our show a few weeks back, and one of the things I brought up to him was that I think a lot of the heat that he gets, because he's a heat magnet. You bring up Vince Russo anywhere, and people are going to go crazy. And
sure.
I think, you know, one of the things I brought up to Vince was that I think people got so into his character and his persona that he had on TV. And
absolutely.
That's one of the reasons why a lot of people just had this disdain for Vince Russo. I personally will go on a record right now saying I don't believe that Russo is a person behind putting WCW out of business. I think anybody who would believe that is just, you know, they got their head up their ass, in my opinion, if they actually believe that.
Absolutely not. One man wasn't the cause for that, right. You know. And like I said, Vince had a lot of bright ideas and good points and was very helpful. But at the same time, there were things that I just think – I remember one time at a pay-per-view in TNA, and I think it was like Beer Money and Team 3D or somebody, but it was a really important like payoff match. And it was going on, and I remember going in the back and seeing Vince watching baseball, like playoff baseball. And I remember just being, like, astonished, like, man, I get it. I'm a huge baseball fan, too, but, like, this is the payoff of this story arc that you guys have been working on. Why are you not invested in this match? And, you know, it was told to me later, well, by the time the match happens, his job is done. He's written a show. And, okay, I get it. You know, I just different philosophy. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a little weird. I don't.
It's just different, yeah.
Yeah, I've never heard that from, you know, hearing stories about, you know, Triple H or Vince McMahon. I've never heard one of those before, so that's kind of weird.
Right. Yeah. That's whatever. That's, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. 2010, TNA changed a little bit. You had Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan arrive in the company. And shortly after that, they formed a group called Immortal at Bound for Glory with Jeff Hardy turned heel. You, AJ Styles, James Storm, Bobby Roode, you guys were known as Fortune at the time with Ric Flair. Can you talk about some of the changes that you saw with Hogan and Bischoff coming in, and then who came up with the idea to align you four as a group and be led by Ric Flair? And do you think that it was kind of a, you know, I've heard AJ in the shoot interview say that he thought that the Fortune, they could have went a different direction with Fortune by having you guys have pretty much four different personas instead of having you guys go out there and wear suits and kind of be a you know, retread of the Four Horsemen.
Yeah, I agree. Fortune was, I'm sure it was like maybe like a Bischoff thing. I remember the first person that ever told me about it was Taz. he kind of pulled me aside and told and kind of told me about it. And this was like weeks before it happened, so I don't know. But it was good for me personally. I mean, it really gave me, you know, something to see my teeth and do, and then to be an actual character. Yeah, we had talked about just doing different things, and instead of being, you know, we were four guys, all of a sudden now we're four guys that wear suits, like, you know, just because that's what bad guys in wrestling stadiums do. Like, you know, again, going back to the status quo, you know, and we pull up limos, and because that's what bad guys, that's what the Four Horsemen did, so that's what we have to do. You know, and AJ and I would always talk, like, why don't we, you know, why doesn't Bobby pull up in a limo? Why doesn't James drive up in a pickup truck? Why don't I pull up on my Harley? Why doesn't AJ pull up on his crotch rocket? You know, show a little, you know, there's four different aspects of our personalities right there. Why do we all have to wear, you know, the three-piece suits? Why can't we wear what we would wear if we were dressing up and going out and just, you know, and just make it different. Just make it very 2010 at the time or whatever. It could have been, you know, if Ric Flair could be Ric Flair, because that's, you know, it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, Ric Flair is Ric Flair, and we're the four individuals that comprise and make fortune. You know, and I think there was some money left on the table there. I think there's a lot of things you could have done, especially as heels. But again, what can you do? They had an end game inside, I suppose.
Yeah, I kind of remember that angle on TV, and you guys were all one big group. It was you guys, and then it was and you guys were part of the Immortal group. And I never understood why they had those two factions together, but they switched you guys off. The rumor had it that they were going to bring in Main Event Mafia back at the time. They're going to bring back Kevin Nash and Booker T and all these guys, and then all of a sudden Booker T and Kevin Nash show up at the Royal Rumble. And that's just completely, like, I don't know if Dixie and Company had, you know, not confirmed with Nash and Booker if they were going to come back or not. And it was a bad deal. And then all of a sudden, okay, Fortune comes out, you guys turn against Immortal, and you guys become baby faces. And then from there, they just went downhill, in my opinion.
Well, we were told, I remember we just getting back from an overseas tour and being pulled into a room with Vince and Dixie and being told, basically, what you just said, you know, we were going to do this with the Mafia. Those guys aren't coming. We're turning you baby faces. This was the plan all along, but we're just doing it faster now because, you know, we had to switch some things around. And just thinking, okay, all right, let's do it. That's, you know, that's what we were told.
I was going to ask you, though, Hogan and Bischoff come in. What did you guys, the overall impression you got of Hogan and Bischoff coming in from what you had heard, you know, growing up as fans, you know, I'm pretty sure you guys read the sheets or whatever about what was going on at the time in WCW. What was your impression of these two guys coming in there and the changes they made? Because one of the immediate changes that they made was decision to get rid of the six sides and go to four sides. And I remember they came out at that Genesis pay-per-view, and the fans in the Impact Zone completely crapped all over that idea.
Yep. Well, I mean, I was a fan of going back to the four-sided ring, obviously.
Yeah.
As we spoke about earlier. You know, and at first, I didn't know if they were there for, you know, just if they were there to legit help the company or just there for their best interests. But as time grew on and as I developed a relationship with both Hulk and Dirk, I think they were there to really help the product. Personally, you'll never hear me say anything bad about them because I get along great with both of them. I had a really, really good relationship with Eric Bischoff, especially when Chris and I formed the team. You know, I had a very open relationship with him, and I learned a lot from him, and he helped me out a lot. And Hulk was great. He loved our act. He loved doing segments with us. We had a great time. I can't, you know, my opinion is different because they were, you know, especially as Bad Influence, they were really they really helped us out a lot, and they really were open to a lot of our ideas. As far as the whole company, I don't know. You might ask 10 different wrestlers to get 10 different answers, but I had a great relationship with them. And I think they did get more eyes on the product, obviously. Hulk Hogan's, you know, he's done a few things. So when people see him on television, they're going to stop and see what he's up to. So I definitely think it helps in getting a few more eyeballs on the product.
You know, before you were talking about, you know, problems with TNA, and we talked about the six-sided ring, we talked about the lack of creativity, or they had something and they would drop the ball, they'd go back to sports entertainment. But I think the number one reason that TNA is where they are today is Dixie Carter. She's been the president almost from day one of the company. And you know, we've heard a lot of things said about her over the years. Some people liked her, some people didn't like her. One of the questions I had for Vince Russo was, did you see her grow at all in the business? I mean, she came from a background of knowing nothing about wrestling, and here she is, what, 12 years later, she's still the president of TNA. From your relationship with Dixie, did you see her grow? And I guess, what's your overall opinion of Dixie Carter as the TNA president?
She's a sweet lady, very intelligent lady. Nothing bad to say about her whatsoever. However, having said that, I think you're only as good as the people you surround yourself with. You know, if you're an owner of a football team, you want to get the best coach, the best offensive coordinator, best defensive coordinator, best quarterback, best offense, best defense. I don't think she is really, I don't think that's her strong suit. You know, when she had the Terry Taylors and the Jeff Jarretts and the Dutch Mantels around, the product, in my opinion, is better because you had guys with more product knowledge running the show. Plain and simple. When those guys went away and other guys were brought in, I think the product fails. So I just think maybe her judgment of who she has around her isn't best in terms of a wrestling show. As a human being, and as a businesswoman, she's one of the sweetest and most compassionate women I've met. But yeah, it's plain and simple. You could be intelligent and smart and compassionate and really, you know, want to run a business like a family more than a business, but if you don't surround yourself with the right players, you're not gonna succeed. Plain and simple, man.
Can you talk about the creative process of TNA over the years? We know Vince Russo's been the head writer for a long time, and then they brought in Dave Lagana, who was formerly of WWE SmackDown. We hear Matt Conway is part of the writing committee, booking staff. Supposedly they brought in Christy Hemme as a part of the booking committee as well, which I don't understand at all. I don't know what she could offer, but that's what we've heard. And I guess, can you just speak to the changes in the creative process? And over the years, did you ever really have a chance to offer any creative input in your character or the storylines?
With Bad Influence, yes. You got rolling because the go-to guys in was Eric Bischoff. And Dave Lagana also, you know, I had a really open relationship with those guys. And Jason Hervey, who was a producer, who's also very helpful, and especially this is all with Chris and myself. You know, we had a really good relationship, and really for the first time since I was starting at TNA, I felt like I could go up and offer my opinion. And when something was written and I didn't agree with it, I could actually say that instead of just being a puppet and, you know, doing what's on the paper and just go out and just, you know, at the end they were just giving me bullet points and giving us bullet points and not writing stuff for us so we could actually just do our own thing. But yeah, that's all kind of went away. I got along good with Matt Conway. I got along good with Dave. They just kept changing who was in charge. And again, you're not going to win a Super Bowl if you change your coach every couple of years. Just plain and simple, man. You can't argue that.
When we talk about the TNA creative process, and we talk about, you know, what wrestling needs as far as an attitude or just more aggression, you know, we're talking about earlier, we were mentioning TV shows. One angle that TNA had done was the Aces and Eights. And it was pretty much, in my opinion, it was just the way they acted and the way they dressed. It was a ripoff of Sons of Anarchy. And do you think that they kind of missed the boat with Aces and Eights? Because, number one, the fact that Sons of Anarchy at that point was kind of like, you know, breaking down. It was on this kind of on this. We're on season one of last season now, season seven. But at the time Aces and Eights came around, it was about the fifth season. And do you think that they kind of missed the boat with that? They should have maybe did it earlier. And do you think that when people started seeing who the guys actually were in the group, do you think that kind of hurt it?
I think the concept is really good, and the concept could have been even better. You know, the first red flag is, you know, you bring in a supposed biker group and none of them are riding bikes. You know,
right.
It was weird that all of a sudden these guys who, there was a couple of new faces involved, like Nux and Westlisto and different guys, but all of a sudden these guys that have been in TNA, like Devon and, you know, Ken Anderson and Baba, all of a sudden they're bikers. Like, it just, that was weird, you know? It was just like, maybe if they just would have been a gang, maybe just not as much emphasis on the MC aspect of it. But I, you know, they were probably trying to capitalize on a very popular television show. But I remember they would always bring in, like, they would bring in this group of, like, Harley riders, and they had a few shots of the guys actually riding bikes. Just nobody rode in the group. I think maybe Ken did. But that was it. Well, Garrett Bischoff rides, I know that. But yeah, it was, I dug the concept, but I think maybe they could have been a little more subtle about it instead of really, you know, trying to make it look like such a takeoff of Sons of Anarchy. But I understand why they did it. And I think it could have been, you know, if done a little bit differently, or if, you know, they took their time with it more, it could have been really good. But it just got, you know, as wrestling factions do, it got diluted towards the end, and just got hot-shotted, and, you know, didn't take their time with it.
Do you think that if they would have maybe, and my idea was, I mean, you know what, I like the concept, right, as you did with Aces and Eights. I thought it was pretty cool. So, you know, I'm into bikes and all that stuff, so I thought it was a cool deal. Do you think that if maybe, because I'm pretty sure, just everything that I know about Eric Bischoff, I think this might have been a Bischoff idea.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that if, you know, maybe if they had a relationship, you know, with maybe a Kurt Sutter or something like that, they could have had maybe did a crossover, had some of those Sam Crow guys, you know, some of the actors come on the show. Do you think that would have maybe garnered, you know, a little bit of mainstream attention to this angle?
Maybe a little bit of mainstream attention, but that would have, that's really blurring the lines between, you know, a work shoot wrestling show and a completely fictional, you know, television show. You know, if they could have, as a matter of fact, I did a charity ride for this really good company called The Boot Campaign.
Yeah, I saw that.
And all the cast of Sons of Anarchy were there.
Yeah.
And I got myself on it and got, you know, TNA helped me out a little bit, and they sent a guy out with a camera, and, you know, and I told him, this could be really big. I'll, you know, we'll get as much footage as we can. And it's a huge show. Put it on the air, let people see that, you know, one of the TNA rosters and some of the Harleys and rides and all that. And that's, you know, it could be a good little crossover thing. They showed like 30 seconds of it on the internet. So I was like, well, these people just don't want that crossover appeal or that mainstream attention. But I mean, yeah, who knows? Who knows, man? That's tough when you're trying to blend, like I said, a fictional show with a, you know, a wrestling show where, you know, a lot of people still buy into the fact that, you know, there's good guys and bad guys, and there's, you know, we're, at the end of the day, we're selling wrestling, you know, and Kurt's selling drama and action. Would've been a cool idea, obviously, but probably wasn't worth it monetarily and probably a few other ways. But yeah, definitely a cool idea. It's just really hard to, it'd be like if, you know, a character that was a crackhead and you brought in Walter White to sell him some stuff. It would just be weird. You know, it'd be tricky to do, I think.
So you mentioned them playing 30 seconds of the clip on the internet. Was this TNA or who?
It's a TNA, yeah. I mean, I told them, I said I'd really like to do this, and they helped me out a little bit, and they had their PR people send out one guy, and he had a camera, and we shot a bunch of stuff that day at just the rally and, you know, the concert, and, you know, I was right there in the thick of it, and I told them, this is a huge show. You know, I get suggested that they have, at the end of the day, they have a big rally. There's bands and there's all types of really cool stuff. If you guys have ever been to, like, the Laughlin River Run or Sturgis, you know, it was like a miniature version of that. And I even pitched, I said, this would be great to run a show. I told them next year, I said, set up a ring. There's bikes everywhere. People are drinking. They want to see you guys fight. Set up a ring. Bring a couple good looking chicks. A couple matches would be great.
Yeah, the old Hall of Wow, WCW Rock.
Right, yeah.
Wow,
you know, just as promotion, you know. Don't, you don't need to film it for a television show or anything, but, you know, just do it for the live, for the house. But fell on deaf ears, man. So I guess, you know, I did my part. I tried to bring this to them, but just, you know, they only took it so far.
You mentioned there that, you know, you're into bikes and all that stuff, and I do remember the Boot Campaign. I think it was out in, like, Santa Clarita or something like that.
Yeah.
Did you ever kind of pitch yourself maybe being part of that group?
No. I mean, I volunteered to ride if they ever need somebody to ride for, like, a double shot. But, no, I mean, because at the time, I was,
me and Chris were heavy in the bad influence, and, you know, that's, there was no other place I wanted to be. Other than that, you know, I was very, very happy and very comfortable doing that. So, I had no desire to be in that.
Did you kind of see the writing on the wall for Jeff Jarrett to leave TNA? And what's your thoughts on Jeff starting a new group now? He's got Global Force Wrestling. He's promoting on Twitter and Facebook and social media. And have you been contacted yet about that group, about part of being, maybe part to be a part of that group at some point?
I didn't see the writing on the wall at all with Jeff. I was shocked when that. I thought I got a text message from him. He can send a bunch of us text messages, or I don't know, but I was shocked. And maybe even Twitter. Maybe I found it on Twitter, but I remember texting him and just saying, like, wow, you know, thank you for everything. Especially because at that time he was just doing a lot of, like, he was the lead agent and doing a lot of the most important matches there and doing a great job at it. And that was the first red flag for me, because I was like, actually the second, because AJ had just left the week before that. And I was like, this is the guy that started the company, right? This same Jeff Jarrett. Like, he's leaving. It was like, wow, that doesn't bode well for this company. I didn't think. I was like, that's just, this guy, if anybody bled TNA aside from AJ Styles, it was Jeff Jarrett. He left, so it was shocking. Yeah, we ran into Jeff in New Orleans this year, and chatted with him and Karen, and, you know, just a buddy of mine. And he's, hey man, anything that he puts his name on as far as professional wrestling, it's gonna have 100% passion and desire behind it, because Jeff, you know, Jeff knows and loves his business like no one else. So when GFW gets running, Global Force Wrestling, say, GFW, when it gets running, I think it's going to be something that will be really cool, probably really innovative, something different. Just because Jeff knows the wrestling audience, and you know, he's going to put everything he has into it. So I can't wait till it really gets rolling, because it's just going to be better for the business.
As a follow-up question about Jeff Jarrett, you know, Jeff Jarrett unfortunately had a couple of, I would say, situations there that, you know, involved, you know, his current wife he's married to right now. And Dixie Carter, you know, apparently found out about that relationship. And subsequently, Jeff was on the back burner. Do you think that Jeff's just kind of lost his passion? You mentioned passion, and everything Jeff does, he's passionate about. Do you think that over time, though, with Jeff really not being in control of TNA and then all of a sudden being put on the back burner because, you know, who you fall in love with, do you think that that played a role in him leaving or being kind of pushed out of TNA?
Possibly. I can't speak for that, but I don't know. I don't think Jeff ever lost his passion. He probably was just disappointed when he was put on the back burner, because at the end of the day, who gives a damn what you do in your personal life? You know, people fall in love with people they probably shouldn't, or people that they didn't expect them to fall in love with all the time. That has nothing to do with the wrestling show itself. That, you know, the situation being unique as it was, okay, I get it, but who gives a damn? You know, right. that's not going to affect what he does. I understand the personal nature of it, because it involved who it did, but I don't think Jeff ever lost his passion for the business. Absolutely not, because just probably maybe became a little more disappointed that all came down the way it did. I don't know. Again, that's, you know, only those four people know really what went on.
Let me answer this question, too, because we were talking a little bit earlier about just publicity and all this other stuff. I have seen it countless times, you know, Frankie, where we here at Gerwig.net had reached out to TNA to try to get interviews with certain talents. And always, you know, we're kind of told no. And it's like, mm-hmm. They don't want the – I'm not understanding how a wrestling company that, in their case, really needs – a Gerwig.net more than a Gerwig.net needs a TNA, why wouldn't they want to have, you know, bring their talent out here, promote Bound for Glory, promote Genesis, promote Impact on Spike? What's the problem there with TNA, you know, having a problem giving websites their talent and always saying no? I don't understand that.
That I don't know. All I know is that when we were there, we were told we can only do interviews if they were cleared by TNA's PR people.
So I guess maybe there's, maybe they have these different websites or dirt sheets or whatever you want to call them that maybe are more favorable to TNA and you know, stroke their ego more, that they would rather have the guys do interviews on. I don't know. I just know that we were forbidden to do interviews if they weren't approved by TNA. Other than that, I can't really comment on that, man. That's how and why they do the things they do, especially now. I couldn't tell you. You would think you would want as many eyes and ears on the product as possible, and as many guys. No employee or contracted wrestler is going to go and bury the company. So I don't know why you would, you know. Everyone, and they have a lot of guys that speak very eloquently about the company. You know, you have guys like Austin Aries and Bobby Roode and Bully Ray that can really, really sell the TNA product. But for whatever reason, they only have them do certain interviews. But again, that's all TNA. I have no idea why they do that.
You know, one of the things that's kind of a disturbing trend with wrestling is you see a lot of the former WWE superstars, you know, get fired, get released, they go to TNA, and now they just had Brodus Clay show up on TNA Wrestling. Yet, when somebody's released, such as yourself or Daniels or Sabin or Shelley or some of the other AJ, they don't go to WWE. WWE doesn't reach out to them. Why do you think that is? Because is it a perception that, you know, TNA is so far down the totem pole that, you know, they're not in WWE's league? Or what's your opinion on why we don't see a lot of TNA talent, you know, jump to WWE?
I don't know, probably because they, you know, their emphasis is on building stars right now and not, you know, and not bringing people that were already known into the company, which I think is a fault. I really like the idea of the Performance Center, but I really am thinking they're missing the boat on a lot of guys. You know, back in the territory days, a guy would show up in WWF that you knew who he was. WWF didn't make him, you knew who he was. Yep. And he was great for the product. You know, I just think that they're really alienating a big chunk of wrestlers in the wrestling audience by not giving very, very talented wrestlers a chance to do that and let them succeed or fail on their own. You know, yes, maybe they're not a WWE creation, but maybe they can help make the WWE some money. And if they don't, they had their chance, you know, move on to the next guy. I just think it's really, really a missed opportunity there, man. I remember being a kid and being thrilled when I would see guys jump back and forth. It was cool. It gave the business some edginess. Some like, wow, I know who this guy is. Like, I know who AJ Styles is. I haven't seen a lot of him before. You're a WWE fan. But I've heard this guy's great. Now he's here. That's awesome. Or, you know, I know who Bad Influence is, or the Machine Guns, or Bobby Roode. You know, like, yeah, you don't get that. You only get that on the other end where guys leave WWE for whatever reason and show up in TNA. It just adds to the watered down wrestling product, I think, going back to just it being too sanitary and too much in just its own bubble.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson on WWF television after being on the Crockett's for so long. I was like, wow. Yep. Look at these guys. I mean, it's like...
Absolutely, yeah. And
well,
I didn't... In California, I didn't even get any of the NWA or Crockett television. I strictly knew about those guys through magazines. But I knew all about them. I knew everything about them. So when they showed up, I knew who they were. I knew the backstory. And I wasn't, you know... I wasn't disappointed that they were called Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. I was thrilled. You know, because I knew who they were. Because I'm a wrestling fan. Wrestling fans are going to know who these people are. But we're not catering to wrestling fans anymore. We're catering to specific demographic and specific hour ratings and all this nonsense. And it's just, what can you do?
Let me do one more question about talent, because we've seen just recently, you know, WWE assigned certain talent, such as Kevin Steen and Prince Devitt and this guy Kenta from New Japan, to developmental deals. Now, you think guys that are well-established in the business like these guys could come right in to WWE television and make a big impact, yet they're offering them developmental deals. So if tomorrow Vince calls you and says, hey, Frankie, we want to put you under a developmental deal and send you to NXT, is that something that would interest you at this point in your career?
I mean, I understand why they do that. You know, those guys that you just mentioned are all outstanding and are going to do huge things, mark my words. But there is such thing as the WWE style. You know, you have to, you know, you could have worked in Japan for however many years and work the indies and then a top guy, but just WWE is a different beast. So I understand bringing the guys in, and those guys aren't going to stay there long because they're just too damn talented. At least I hope not. But that's
never know anymore, Frankie. You never know.
Yeah, that's true. I say that as a fan of those guys, hoping they're not.
Right.
I hope I get to see those guys on Mondays and Fridays and pay the view soon. But I mean, it's just learning. I think just learning the system and just really, the way they do things. Because you're not going to learn how WWE does things unless you're there. There's no indie or TNA. Nothing's going to prepare you for that unless you're actually there. They probably have instances where they brought guys in and thrown them right into the fire and they failed just because they weren't familiar with the system. I think that's the reason they're doing that. The other reason being they sign guys that are ex-football players or ex-something just because they look good and they need to learn everything from the ground up. These guys, Fergal and Kevin and Kenta, they're already very well-established wrestlers and outstanding wrestlers and good promos. They just need to learn how it's done. And in my opinion, that's fine. If they said to me, hey, we want to bring you in just to get you familiar with the system, absolutely. Do I want to be in a developmental program where I'm going to wrestling school every day? No. I know how to wrestle. I know how to cut a promo. But if they want to tweak it and show me how they would prefer I do it, absolutely. And I think that's the reasoning behind this. And, as long as those guys don't step down there for too long, I think it's a good system. I just disagree with ignoring guys just because they have a TNA stigma about them or a Ring of Honor stigma about them. I just think they're missing the boat on certain guys.
When you say it, okay, here's the thing that I noticed about, TNA and WWE in recent years, about the talents that I've actually seen come from the TNA side. Okay, I saw you go over there. And I thought for the most part you were doing pretty good there. I mean, they had you on Velocity a lot, though, but you were doing good. Velocity was supposed to be this high-paced show, so I thought you were doing good there. They actually they also brought over the Alpha Male, Monty Brown. They brought him over.
Mm-hmm.
They brought over – who else was it? They brought over Chris Harris. They
mm-hmm.
brought him over. And the last one that they brought over from that group was Ron Killings, R-Truth. And – out of all you guys, R-Truth is the one that's still there. And I think he's still there simply because he was in the WWE first. So he knows how to work the system down there at the WWE. But, I mean, you just said it right there. It's kind of like, to me, it's a stigma. I call it the TNA stigmatitis is what I call it, because it just seems to me that they don't mess with a lot of talents from there because they're associated with that brand. But if you look at the Ring of Honor, on the other hand, now, they've signed Kevin Steen. A lot of guys have turned Ring of Honor, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, list goes on and on, Tyler Black.
Absolutely.
Do you think that, there could possibly be in the future a working relationship there as Ring of Honor could be seen as maybe the developmental, or not necessarily the developmental, but it could be a springboard.
Like a feeder system.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there already is an unofficial working agreement.
Yeah.
Just because look at the guys you just mentioned, and I'm sure they have their eyes on the Ring of Honor product and they see guys that they want to do stuff with. And I've been told that in WWE's by TNA doesn't exist, which is cool. But if that's the case, why do these guys have stigmas on them? The guy's a good wrestler. He's a good wrestler. Who cares where he's been?
Right.
That's my opinion. Like if I own the St. Louis Rams and I hate the Dallas Cowboys, but one of the Cowboys players became available, I'm not going to not sign on my team because he was a Cowboy. It makes no sense.
Amen to that. That's right.
It makes no sense. It makes no sense. It's just you want.
Right.
If I'm presenting the best wrestling product, I want the best wrestlers in the world. I don't care what they've done, where they've been, what they look like. If they're great wrestlers and good people, I want them on my roster. But just my opinion, just the way I would run the show. Apparently not the way they do business.
I mean, hopefully in the future that kind of changes, because I would love to see you and Daniels and AJ all in WWE. I think they're really missing the boat with a lot of you guys, especially when AJ Styles became a free agent, became available. I mean, they could catch them right up.
AJ Styles would fit in great there. Myself, I think all these years later, I'm much more mature, much more intelligent about the business, much more savvy about how I wrestle. I would love the opportunity. I know Chris Daniels would too. And I think the fans would, it would really shake things up by bringing these guys in. And, these guys would be, that know how to get themselves over and know how to, and guys can work with anybody. And I just think, it would really satisfy the fans too. It's just, you know, they have a business structure, and it's been very, very successful for them. And if they have if it ain't broke, don't change it. Don't fix it philosophy. Yeah, so be it.
Yeah, I get that philosophy. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But you know what? Right now, it's really broke. Because the business, you know, ever since, to me, you know, when ECW went out and then WCW went under, and, you know, I mean, TNA was supposed to be the next big thing, you know, and it really wasn't. I guess my next question is going to be to you is that you're working at Ring of Honor now. You know, you guys are doing your thing. You guys made your return there on the Best in the World pay-per-view, actually at the Nashville Asylum. Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
You know, how does it feel to go, you know, and I don't want to be, you know, an ass and say this, but it's just the truth. How does it go to go to a show and actually compete in front of people instead of going to one of the TNA shows and competing in front of like 100 people?
Well, it's great because people at Ring of Honor shows, fans of Ring of Honor shows are there because they want to be there. Because they want to see the best wrestling in the world, you know, and, in the past, TNA probably didn't advertise the best they could a lot of our live events, and a lot of people didn't even know we were in town. And, you know,
really?
the attendance failed, which is unfortunate. But yeah, Ring of Honor, man, people are there because Ring of Honor's got such a good reputation for presenting some incredible wrestling. So he's a rabid fan base no matter where we go. So it's awesome, you know. And, you know, we were still being treated like prisoners of war. You know, a lot of the fans are coming up to us and, oh, I'm like, how do you... We're so glad you're here. You guys are so misused. You know, so we're kind of POWs right now, prisoners of wrestling, I guess. So, but people say that being genuine and being, you know, genuinely happy to see us there and see us compete like we could compete, you know, because we're having great matches with a lot of really talented guys. And towards the end of our TNA run, when we were wrestling, it was, you know, we had to do a 4-minute television match with a wacky finish and, you know, and just people, I think, maybe forgot that we were both very accomplished wrestlers and really good tag team.
Very, very true.
I know you probably can't say a whole lot about your status, but, you know, since, you know, leaving TNA, have you reached out to WWE? Have they reached out to you? Or I guess the question would be, do you think there's a chance we could see Frankie Kazarian back in WWE at some point?
I mean, I have several friends up there, and, you know, I have not personally reached out at all. Just because, you know, I know what they're looking for right now, and I know that I probably don't fit that mold. But to be really cliche, you know, I can go with the old never say never. But of course, that's something I would, you know, absolutely entertain. But I've not, you know, reached out to them. Like I said, I have friends and I've, you know, chatted here and there. But, you know, it's one of those things. If it's meant to be, it's going to happen. And if I could fill a role they need, I would be happy to do my best to fill it. If that doesn't happen, I'm not going to shed one tear over it. But, you know, they're the standard bear for wrestling. You know, so there's guys I would love to work with up there, and there's things I'd love to do up there, and things I think I could do well up there. But if that's not in the college, so be it. If that happens, I'd be thrilled and I'd welcome them with open arms.
With TNA's current situation right now, Frankie, with them not being renewed and having to, you know, look for another home as far as the cable goes, if you know, unfortunately, if TNA were to go under, which I think would be horrible for the wrestling business if that were to happen, but if they were actually to go under, who are some of the talents that you would like to see in TNA possibly make a return or come to Ring of Honor?
Obviously, Samoa Joe and Austin Aries, as far as guys that have been there and done that in Ring of Honor, they would be great. I'd love to see Bobby Roode, who's a tremendous wrestler, especially even guys like Ken Anderson and Gunner, because they're friends and because they think they could help add to the product. Those guys are obviously off the top of my head, I think would be great additions to the company. I hope TNA doesn't go under. I hope this guy kicks their head out of their ass and signs them, but I don't know if that's going to happen. I might have fallen out of favor with Spike for saying that, but oh well.
Hey, Frankie, do you have the WWE Network?
I do. I did get the network. Yeah, I did. Simply because the content of the old stuff, because I'm more of a, you know, I can watch Saturday Night's Main Event all day long before I can watch a current television, a current wrestling program. But yeah, just for all the
because that's literally all their the network is you know, 10 boxes worth of VHS tapes I have in my garage, so I can now throw those away, which is cool.
Oh, I think you might want to keep those, Frankie, because at least on those tapes you got in the garage, that's the original music.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But who has a VCR, A, or the time to transfer all that to DVD nowadays?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I do have it, and I got it, honestly, for the old content. It's if I'm home and the pay-per-view's on and I want to watch it, or there's a match I want to watch, I will, but I don't just sit down and watch it all the time. I barely use it unless there's something like, oh, I want to look at that match, and I'll pop it up. But, yeah, I do have it, and it's what a good tool for the wrestling student, you know?
Yep.
Hey, Frankie, do you think Spike TV will retain Impact Wrestling, or do you think it will be forced to find a new home in 2015?
Don't know. I think they should. You know, people can harp on TNA's ratings, but at the end of the day, they're bringing in more viewers than probably almost any other show on that network, with the exception of a couple. You know, they're not pulling WWE numbers, but no one's going to, ever. It's not going to change, ever. I think they should. I think they should resign them, but, you know, don't know if that's going to happen. I have no idea. I hope they do, though. I don't know. I have no clue on that end of anything, but I hope they do.
How is your beautiful wife, Tracy Brooks, doing? And is there any chance we may see her in wrestling sometime in the future?
She's great. She is a wife and mother now. She's not going to be doing any wrestling anytime soon. She had a great 14-year career, accomplished more than she probably ever thought she was going to. You know, I'm not going to rule out the occasional appearance maybe in the next few years, but right now she's a full-time mom and a full-time wife. And when you're married to me, that's a job that you should be paid double time, overtime and everything, because it's probably not the easiest job in the world. So, you know, she's great at that, and she's doing really good. And, you know, it's just she's definitely my rock and definitely keeps me grounded and helps me. You know, being married to her and somebody that's in the business is really so beneficial to me. Just in terms of just her knowing my schedule and knowing that I'm on the road and just, you know, being another ear to talk to, somebody that actually gets it.
You know, Frankie, she probably won't remember, but when we used to do the Gerwick Report hotline back in the day, she was kind of like a semi-regular guest, and we always enjoyed having her on. So we definitely miss her, and we wish her nothing but, you know, the best of luck in the future.
Yeah, she said to say hello. She said she remembers all that.
Cool.
Yeah, she's, you know, she's always a pleasant interview, and, you know, likes to hear herself talk, so I could imagine that was probably true. But yeah, she's doing great, and she said to say what's up to you guys.
Well, Frankie, I wanted to kind of switch topics a little bit. Because you and I, you know, you and I are both, you know, fans of Sons of Anarchy, and there's in the seventh season right now, and so far it's been kind of crazy, a lot more killing than I would have expected. But in the long run, what do you think is going to end up with the club? Do you think that Jax is going to end up finding out the truth about who killed his wife and possibly kill her? Do you think that they're kind of, you know, I mean, the last episode this past Tuesday, they had Jax kind of starting a war there with August Marks. And, I mean, where do you see it going?
I think like any Shakespearean tragedy or Greek tragedy, I think everybody's going to die or everybody's going to suffer. I think Jimmy's going to be left alone with nobody, no kids, no son, no Nero, because that's her biggest fear, is being left alone. I think the club will cease to exist. I don't see it ending happy, man. That's all I can say. If that show's taught me anything, I don't see a happy ending. I see it as more of a tragedy. But it's a tremendous show. You know, still one of the absolute best on television. A lot of maybe a little too much violence for the sake of violence this season thus far.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, that's splitting hairs. Such a well-written show and such really good character development. Yeah, dude, I do see it. I see it ending, you know. I hope the boys get out alive, and, you know, it'd be good to see a couple of the guys get out alive, but I see it ending very tragically.
Yeah, that's where I see it. I mean, I think they've kind of, like, you know, first it was Opie's death that kind of pushed Jax over the limit, and now it's Tara, and now they have a new sheriff, and the new sheriff has got a thing for Chibs, and she's taking money. So that's kind of weird and kind of crazy where they're going with it, but I'm going to see it to the end.
Yeah, I do miss Ron Perlman's character and Maggie Siff play Mantera. I understand they had to go, but I think they added just a really different dimension to that show, and I miss both those characters. But I'm waiting with bated breath for this season to unfold and just thrill every Tuesday night to watch it.
Yeah, I just was, my kind of thing was I was hoping FX would make a mistake and just play next Tuesday's episode tonight. But I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
And, Frankie, I wanted to ask you, my last question for you was about Star Wars. I know we're both huge Star Wars fans.
Yes,
your expectations for, Episode 7, we've heard, some rumblings that they're going to bring back a lot of the original characters. Luke Skywalker's coming back, Han Solo, Princess Leia, et cetera. What'd you think of the prequel, the first three episodes that aired? And I don't know, sometimes I have a real, after going back and watching the episodes 1 through 3, I have a real hard time believing that the Anakin Skywalker character turned into Darth Vader. Just that Hayden Christensen, I just didn't think did it for that role, and some of the other characters they had in the prequel. Just, I guess, your overall thoughts now of, where Star Wars is, and maybe your expectations for the future episodes.
Well, I felt about the prequel the same way I feel about this episode 7 coming out. I'm just psyched that there's new Star Wars. When I first heard that, I was just like, we're getting, because I thought like my whole generation, that episode 3 was it, and I would have been happy with that. But it was like, that whole universe is just so enamoring, and just you fall in love with it. You want to see what happens to these characters. So when I heard that, I was thrilled. The prequels, I remember going back when I first watched them, I was, I think I was just drinking a lot of Kool-Aid, and I was like, okay, these are cool. Going back, episode 1 I don't like. It's a little too campy. I think it could have made it edgier, going back to wrestling and even be like an edgier stuff. Episode 2 wasn't bad. Episode 3 I actually enjoyed. I thought that was cool, and I thought visually it was stunning, and the fight between Obi-Wan and Anakin I thought was epic, because we'd all heard about that fight on the lava planet. We all read about that and heard about that for what, 30 years. So it was cool to see that. Maybe things could have been done differently, but George Lucas, if he's behind it, or if it has Star Wars brand on it, I'm gonna watch it. There's a lot of people going nuts already about the new Star Wars, and it's like, actually, man, just relax and just enjoy that we're getting another Star Wars. I think J.J. Abrams is gonna really pour his heart and soul into this, and he's not going to want to let down the angry mob that is the Star Wars nerds, which is guys like you and me. I think we just lay back and wait and enjoy the fact that we're getting, a whole new generation of Star Wars. From what I understand, there would be 7, 8, 9, and perhaps a Han Solo movie and a Boba Fett movie. I'm just thrilled for that, man.
I liked episode 1 because Anakin was 9 years old. It wasn't Hayden Christensen. I guess I just really didn't like him at all. Didn't buy him at all as Anakin Skywalker. The only thing I didn't really like about the first one was that pod race went on forever and ever. But I liked Qui-Gon Jinn. I liked Darth Maul as an interesting character. There were some things I liked about the early episodes, but episodes 4, 5, and 6 are iconic, and it is going to be refreshing to see Luke and Han and Leia, maybe Chewie and R2-D2 and all the originals come back. And as you said, it's something new. We haven't seen it before. The only question really was with Star Wars is it getting too watered down? They've had the Clone Wars, the animated series, and there's other. I guess they got a new show this fall in Disney, another animated series. The question is it just too overexposed, oversaturated? Kind of the same thing with WWE show after show after show. Is it just too much at some point? I mean, I love Star Wars, but at some point I just don't want to watch Star Wars anymore. Like WWE, I love WWE, but at some point I just want to turn it off. If you get what I'm saying.
If you watch all the content, it probably does become watered down. I watched the first couple seasons of Clone Wars and I just kind of fell off. Not because I didn't like it, just because I stopped watching it. But I just, I guess if you watch everything, it probably can be a bit of overload. But, all those products are generating revenue. All those shows are, bringing in money. So I understand why they're doing them. But, going back to the prequels, I think Darth Maul should have been in all three of them. I don't think they should have killed him off at the very end. And I think Anakin should have been, already in the a young man or older teenager already in the academy when Obi-Wan met him,
because that kind of would have, I think, made more sense in terms of the story we already told. You know, if we met him as a young, cocky, arrogant pilot, but that just had this aptitude to use the Force, you know, I think that might have been better. I get why they went with the kid. I don't know. I think if they would have taken that route, it would have been a little cooler, had a little more cool factor, and, you know, kind of would have tied into what we all thought when we heard the story that Obi-Wan told Luke. But again, you know, I go back to what I said earlier. I'm psyched for the new one. I am thrilled to see where these characters go, and thrilled for these movies, and thrilled I can introduce my child into, you know, to become a Star Wars nerd just like his dad and like millions of other guys across the world.
Yep, another generation will grow up on Star Wars, so that'll be interesting to see what, you know, where they go, the storylines, right, you know, in the future, who the new bad guy is going to be, who's going to be the new emperor. Or who is going to be the leader of the bad side, the dark side? So it's going to be interesting to see where they go from here. So
yeah, I would like just to say, if J.J. Abrams is listening, that bad influence are both trained Jedis. So if he does need either Jedis or Sith to fill a role, Christopher Daniels or Frankie Kazarian would be happy to slay some stormtroopers or hunt down some Jedis. We are qualified for both. Our agent is on the other line waiting. I know J.J. Abrams is a big fan of the show, so I know he's listening. So our agents are on the line waiting so we can top dollars and cents as soon as this conversation is over.
Well, very good. Frankie, before we wrap up, what do you got coming up, upcoming appearances, upcoming shows? And I know you did a comic book series as well.
Yep.
And then lastly is, you know, how can fans get a hold of you? I know you're on the social media, and go ahead and plug your Facebook and Twitter as well.
At Frankie Kazarian on Twitter. That's the only social media I'm on. I look at that all the time. I respond to as many things as I can. I'm also part of an app called Tweet Secret. It's a secret.com, which is really cool. It's a video on demand app, which is really a lot of wrestlers and musicians and actors are on. Coming up this Friday, I'll be in BTW in Northern California, San Jose area. Next weekend, Christopher Daniels and myself are both in New York for the FWE promotion for two nights, along with the Young Bucks and a lot of really good Drew Galleries there, and Carlito and Tommy Dreamer and Joey Ryan and Candice LeRae. After that, I got Ring of Honor in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and a lot of Ring of Honor dates up until the end of the year, man.
Well, awesome. Well, we definitely appreciate your time. This has been a great interview here on the Girl Report podcast. It's great catching up with you, Frankie, because I was looking back, and it was 2005 was the last time we talked to you on the Girl Report hotline right after your WWE stint. So it was great catching up to you, and we wish you and you know, Christopher Daniels nothing but the best in all your future endeavors.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Let's do it sooner than 9 years, my friend.
Amen to that.
Right on. Thank you, guys.